is the NT Country Hour on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory.
G'day there, my name's Matt Brand. Welcome to the Country Hour. As farms around Australia face a looming shortage of workers, today you'll meet a berry grower who is offering up a cash prize of $50,000 in an effort to lock in a workforce.
Getting people to come out to Tabulum has proven to be challenging. So, you know, we've decided to announce that we've put together a prize pool of $50,000 that pickers during the season will be able to earn tickets in a draw.
Yeah, $50,000 cash prize. Will it work? Will it attract workers for the farm? We'll take a closer look at that in a moment. Also today, the Territory Government has just announced some more details around its plans for a gamba army. And it's been 5 years since the fungal disease myrtle rust was first found in the Northern Territory. It has popped up again this month in the Darwin region. I'll tell you more about that before 1:30. We're broadcasting across the Territory on the ABC, and g'day if you're tuning in via the podcast. Well, after 14 days in quarantine, a group of about 160 seasonal workers from Vanuatu have today been allowed to step out of the facility there at Howard Springs and head off to various mango farms in the Top End to start working, to start picking mangoes. This group are the first seasonal workers allowed into Australia since strict borders were enforced back in March to stop the spread of COVID-19. So what's happening today in Darwin? It is significant. It's regarded as a trial. And if it's successful, then more workers from places like Vanuatu are expected to arrive in the coming weeks and months to help not just harvest NT mangoes, but to help harvest crops right around the nation. In Darwin this week, to greet the seasonal workers as they came out of Howard Springs, is Samson Vilvilfare, who is the High Commissioner of Vanuatu. I spoke to him just a short time ago.
This week, I come here just to meet workers, some 160 workers that are here in the quarantine facilities. And these workers come from the Mango project, the pilot project that the Northern Territory government and the Commonwealth government with the Vanuatu government are doing to bring the workers over here to work in the mango industry here in Northern Territory. So today is their final day at the quarantine, and when they are out of the quarantine facilities here. And so I'm coming to greet them, but also to provide them with some more instructions, especially during this COVID-19. And also, you know, the role of the High Commission of Vanuatu in Canberra, how we could support them in providing them consular service if need be. But also, you know, talking to them and see that they're in a good mood and ready to go to work out there.
You've just met with some of the workers. How are they?
They're in very good spirit. They're in a very good spirit. They were well looked after, and of course, Vanuatu government is very, very grateful to the Australian government, but also the Northern Territory government to look after them in this well-equipped facility here in Darwin. And they're really in good spirit, and they're ready to go out there and work.
A lot has been said about how important these workers are for the NT's mango industry, but tell us about the other side. How important is the seasonal worker program for these people, their families, and the economy there in Vanuatu?
This is a very important program, the labor mobility program that Australia has with Pacific Island countries, with particularly Vanuatu. And Vanuatu has a big stake in this program because we're sending the highest number of labor mobility workers, especially seasonal, under the Seasonal Workers Program, SWP, to Australia. And I think this is really an important aspect for Vanuatu in sending these workers here to be able to make a living, you know, making money here and sending money back home to their families back home. But especially during this COVID-19. And we're very grateful, the Australian government, but also the Northern Territory government, for choosing to have this pilot project with Vanuatu during this this difficult time where we have this pandemic. And the workers are so grateful. So I spoke to some of them this morning, and they're quite grateful of being here, of coming, of being chosen to come and work under this pilot project. Yeah.
Because how is the economic situation in Vanuatu at the moment?
Vanuatu's economy is predominantly based on tourism, and tourism has been badly affected due to the closure of the borders back in Vanuatu. We've been COVID-free until now. We're very happy to be COVID-free until now. But the economic impact of that means that, you know, we're quite affected by the fact that the tourism was closed in Vanuatu. And so any opportunity that we get out there would be great for us. It would be great for our people. And obviously, this pilot project on mango is one of them. And we're very grateful to have this pilot mango project where our people can come here in Australia and work during these difficult times.
So around 160 workers from Vanuatu will head off into various top-end mango farms today. What's your understanding on when another plane load may arrive? Because the mango industry would love more.
We've got the request for more workers to definitely come to Australia, but like I said, this is a discussion that is left to both of our government to discuss and to have a talk on it, and to see, you know, for future workers coming to Northern Territory. We also understood from the farmers' point, from the farmers' perspective, that there is a need to have more workers coming to work here. But once again, we have to work out the terms and conditions, you know, together with the Australian government, because this is a partnership between both of us, and it should not be only, you know, either Vanuatu deciding or Australia deciding, but we should both sit together at the table and look at the terms and conditions in probably bringing more workers to Australia for this particular industry, mango industry.
Does Vanuatu have an aim, though? Would it love to see, you know, say 3,000 people come to Australia and earn an income?
We haven't gone that far yet in defining how many of our people we think that could be eligible to come to Australia. And once again, you know, sending anybody to here, we should also look at all these aspects of these pandemics and doing it the right way. And of course, health and safety are the most important things to look into them first, you know, when putting such projects, because I understand that it's, you know, it's costly in bringing people in, coming and quarantine them here in Australia. That also, you know, entails a cost from both sides, but it is something that we're going to work on and probably look at the needs out there, and once again sit together, the two governments sit together and talking through the terms and conditions.
And do you have a role to play in all of this? Like, will you be calling the government later on this afternoon to say, this is what I saw, this is what they told me?
The High Commission of Vanuatu in Australia is here to represent, obviously, the Vanuatu government here on ground. And we're definitely going to provide some reports and some feedbacks to the government on how we see this rolling out here. And as I mentioned, we're very, very privileged to be chosen, to be the chosen one during this pandemic, actually, to come here and be part of this pilot project. So we're definitely going to contact our government and providing more feedback to the government. And probably, you know, these feedbacks will be very helpful in future pilot projects if there's any plan for the future. So we'll definitely let our government know, you know, of what we saw today.
And just finally, High Commissioner, has someone given you a nice, ripe, juicy Northern Territory mango yet?
We're looking to go and have some of the beautiful mangoes now.
Good, good.
We haven't had the chance to go and have some of that yet, but definitely, and I'm definitely looking forward to go and try and taste some of these beautiful mangoes, because once they get to Canberra, they're getting too expensive in Canberra.
Well, enjoy your time in the Territory, and thank you so much for your time on the Country Hour.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. Bye-bye.
That is Samson Vilvilfare, who is the High Commissioner of Vanuatu in Australia. He's normally based in Canberra, but this week he's in the Northern Territory in Darwin today to greet the seasonal workers as they make their way out of the Howard Springs quarantine facility. And I was there early this morning and saw the buses. They're jumping on the buses and heading out to Mango Farms to start working, to start picking. The NT Mango Harvest, it is heating up. We heard yesterday that more than 100,000 trays were picked last week. This week, the number likely to be around 140,000, 150,000 trays. So things are getting busy. These workers from Vanuatu will have plenty to do. The NT mango industry, it's trying all sorts of things at the moment to attract as many workers as possible. But have they thought about offering up a $50,000 cash incentive? A blueberry company in New South Wales is giving that a crack. We'll learn more about it next.
G'day, how you going? It's Leo Skliros here, President of the Northern Territory Mango Industry Association, and you're listening to The Country Hour.
I know Leo's busy picking mangoes at the moment, and we'll actually be broadcasting the program from his place tomorrow. We'll be in the packing shed at Skliros Produce. Mangoes flying left, right and centre, and the Country Hour smack bang in the middle of it. It'll be good fun. Looking forward to it. That'll be tomorrow's Country Hour, live from the Pack House. Hope you can join us. And I'll make sure I ask Leo about this idea. How's this? A blueberry company in New South Wales, which says it needs to source an extra 200 workers in the next month or so, has decided to offer up $50,000 in cash prizes in an effort to attract those workers. So this company is called Mountain Blue Orchards. Apparently it did something a bit similar back in 2017, and it worked pretty well. The managing director there is Andrew Bell. He told Kim Honan that this year is looking to be a very challenging environment in terms of attracting labour.
The number of visa holders in Australia, given the border restrictions, has come right down. So, you know, we're starting to feel the pressure in terms of onboarding harvest labour this year. One of our larger farms is at a little town called Tabulum, west of Casino, and somewhat remote. So getting people to come out to Tabulum has proven to be challenging. So, you know, we've decided to announce that we've put together a prize pool of $50,000 that pickers during the season will be able to earn tickets in a draw through things like attendance and productivity and health and safety record. And then at the end of the season, we'll be doing the draw. There'll be a $10,000 prize for first, a $5,000 prize for second, and then 35 $1,000 prizes.
So how successful was it in 2017 in attracting workers out to Tabulum?
It's difficult to quantify, but we do feel it was successful. One component of the prize pool is keeping people to the end of the season. So usually when the season starts winding down, people look to the next crop and move off to things like cherries. So at the end of the season, we often find it difficult. But, you know, to keep your tickets in the draw, you know, we're going to require people to stay with the farm until, you know, until we no longer require the services. So, you know, I think from a retention of staff perspective, it's really important.
So how many workers are you currently short by?
Over the next month, if we could find another sort of 150 to 200, that would be very comforting.
And what are your thoughts on the recommendations out of the Working Holiday Maker Program, or otherwise known as the Backpacker Inquiry, looking at, you know, recommendation to the government to allow people on job seekers to work on farms, and also possibly the idea of discounting HECS for those school leavers who take a gap year to work on farms?
Any program like that that's going to encourage Australians to get out to the region and help get our crops off is fantastic, in my opinion. And I think, you know, Australians from the city would really enjoy a stint in the country and seeing, you know, some of the great things that Australia has to offer in the regions.
And finally, to the other big story of the week, more disturbing stories of worker exploitation from backpackers about working conditions and pay on farm. How concerning and damaging is this for the horticultural sector, especially when you desperately need workers?
It's always disappointing to read stories like this. From our perspective, you know, we go above and beyond to treat people with dignity and respect and, you know, comply with all of the requirements and make sure that everybody can earn a good living. And we have some pickers at the moment earning significant amounts of money. And so, you know, to hear these stories is very disappointing for, you know, all of those good farmers out there who work hard and do the right people and treat people with respect.
So how much can a blueberry picker working for Mountain Blue Orchards actually earn? Because one of those stories was from a backpacker working on a strawberry farm who says that she earned as little as $2.50 an hour.
We've got pickers at the moment earning over $300 a day, Kim.
Is that by the hour or is it, you know, piece rate?
We do piece rates. So we calculate the piece rates every day based on, you know, the actual conditions, how the fruit's presenting, what sort of weather it is. So that's calculated every day. And, you know, at the moment we've got lots of fruit picking well and pickers are really excited and really happy and earning good money.
That's Andrew Bell, who's the Managing Director of Mountain Blue Orchards, which is a big blueberry company in New South Wales. Speaking there to Kim Honan about some of the things that company is doing to attract workers this year, including offering up $50,000 in cash prizes. That's an interesting one. Will it work? Are there any growers in the Northern Territory who think that's a good idea? $50,000 in cash prizes. I think he's right. You'd stick around for it, wouldn't you? If you had a few tickets in the draw and you're weighing up whether to do the last 1 or 2 weeks of work on the blueberry farm or duck up the road to do something else, you'd stick around, wouldn't you? So he might be onto something there. It is 14-1. You are tuned into the Country Hour. The Territory Government has just announced some more details about its planned Gamba Army. Tell you more about it next.
Yo, country, hello, my name is Otto Campion, Pulmanier, they call me from Bushname. I'm a Arafia swamp ranger. I'm working with many countrymen. And you're listening to the Country Hour.
You sure are. Matt Brown with you this afternoon. The Territory Government has today announced some more details around its plans for a Gamba Army. This, of course, was one of the more unusual promises in the lead-up to the Territory election, creating a so-called army of about 45 people to get out there and reduce the spread of the weed Gamba grass. The NT Weeds Branch and Territory Natural Resource Management, they've been put in charge of delivering this Gamba Army. The NT's Minister for Environment, Eva Lawler, spoke on this just a short time ago. Let's have a listen.
So very pleased to be here today to announce the Gamba Army. There's been a lot of talk about the Gamba Army. It was one of the ideas that was in the Territory Economic Reconstruction Report initial paper, the Green Paper. It was one of our election commitments. So a great day today to be able to tick off two things that our government have implemented very early in our term of in our second term of government. So the Gamba Army, though, will be managed by the Weeds Branch. So the expertise of the department's Weeds Branch will be there. But underneath that, we'll have the Territory Natural Resource Management Group, who will then be the coordinators, the people on the ground, that will work with a range of other organisations to deliver the work of the Gamba Army. So whether that's CDP people or whether that's partnering with rangers, small businesses that are already in that Gamba spraying space, Territory Natural Resource Management will manage that work. There are about three stages to the Army's work as well. So the first stage is about mapping. That's already underway. So the department has had MOU and agreement with CDU to look at that mapping work. That's about $100,000 worth of work, separate to the $500,000 of the Gamba Army. That work is already underway. So if we have that really clear data, that clear evidence of where we need to target the work of the Gamba Army, that's already underway. The second stage then is the work around mitigation, around eradication. It's about getting out there, the actual army work of the boots on the ground. And again, this is the clear, important time, the start of the wet season from November to April, where the issue of gamba grass needs to be addressed. So that's the second stage. The third stage will be using that mapping work, having a look where needs to be followed up, and that mopping up work. So about three stages, one already underway. Through the Gamba Army, we're looking at about 45 jobs for Territorians. So 45 Territorians who have possibly been out of work due to the impact of COVID will benefit from the Gamba Army. And that's the whole point of the Territory Reconstruction Commission paper. It's about how we rebound. So really excited about this project. Look forward to seeing the results of this project, but also to seeing people at the top end get on board and help out. So we'll continue with our spraying program, continue with the glyphosate, the free chemicals that we give out as well to address gamba. But the Gamba Army will provide that coordinated approach. We'll be targeting areas like Charles Darwin Park here, Casuarina Coastal Reserve, Litchfield Park as well. But a great initiative, a great idea that came out of the green paper, the reconstruction paper, but it's also one of our election commitments.
That's the Territory's Minister for Environment, Eva Lawler, speaking in Darwin just a short time ago. Some more details out today about the planned Gamba Army. Now, we're joined this afternoon by Karen May, who is the Chief Executive of Territory Natural Resource Management. Afternoon to you, Karen.
Hello, Matt. How are you?
I am well. Tell us about the Gamba Army. How does Territory NRM fit into this?
Well, look, I think this is a great partnership, a great government and community partnership. And as you know from things that you've done with us in the past, we're a not-for-profit organisation that works with a range of landholders and community groups and businesses to try to protect and improve the natural environment. So this fits in really well with the kind of things that we're already doing. Our role in this is to coordinate and manage the Gamba Army. So the Gamba Army, for this year, the funding will boost efforts to control gamba across this year. The first thing that we'll be needing to work on is actually getting that Gamba Army established.
There's 45 people.
Yeah, so I guess the first thing that we need to do is actually recognise that there are already a whole bunch of landholders, contractors, Indigenous rangers, park rangers, community groups that do work on gamba grass every year. So there are people already out there doing it. So as part of the people that will be involved in Gamba Army, we'll probably be going back in the first instance to some of those contractors and others to see what capacity they may have to take on additional work, take on additional people.
Because, right.
You know, if we've got expertise, then let's build on those things. And then we'll look to then work with other organisations that have shown an interest in doing this. So organisations that do CDEP, employment agencies, to then bring other people into the Gamba Army. And obviously, where people are coming in new, they're going to have to be trained to be able to identify gamba, to be able to spray gamba, have PPE equipment, all of those kind of things.
Because we've just been talking about the mango industry and how it's struggling to find mango pickers.
Mm-hmm.
How confident are you of finding gamba army people?
Well, that will be an interesting thing to be doing. So, look, I'm hopeful that there's a lot of passion out there about gamba grass. There's lots of...
I think there is, Karen. I think there is passion out there.
Yeah. I think there is. So I'm hoping that the community and contractors and rangers will be wanting to get on board with this. This is it's a great opportunity. We've got this boost in funding for this year. If we can make this a success, I mean, we'd love to be able to say this has been a success and we can build on and extend this kind of program into the future.
So when are you hoping to have boots on the ground, army boots?
Army boots. Well, we're going to need army boots as the gamba gets green. So we can't actually do control work until the gamba's green.
Yep.
We can all feel the kind of the humidity starting to rise. Hopefully, we're being told that there'll be an early wet season. So, come November, we need to have people ready to go. So
November, righty-o.
Yeah, so November, December, we need to have people ready to go to be out there doing spraying. The season goes through until sort of March or April. So depending on where we need to spray and, we'll focus on different areas, depending on what needs to happen, the timing that we'll need to actually spray.
If I'm listening to this and I haven't got a job and I'm keen on the idea of joining the Gamba Army, what should I do?
You can actually touch base with our office.
Yep, so Territory NRM.
So if you went to the Territory NRM website and you can send us an email or give us a call, and we'd be very happy to talk to you.
Is eradication possible, do you think, Karen May?
Look, there are two zones for gamba control. So there is an eradication zone, which is further away from Darwin. So that's kind of, once you head out to West Arnhem Land, Kakadu, south of Castra and all of those places, that's an eradication zone. And that's because there is sparsely spread gamba through those areas or through some of those areas. Largely there is no gamba. And so it's eradicatable there. So we're actually already running a program in collaboration with Parks Australia, Indigenous Rangers, other landholders in the West Arnhem and Kakadu region to eradicate gamba grass and ensure that there isn't spread through that region. In the control zone, there is much more gamba. So that's a bigger and a longer term thing.
Rock position. We've got the news coming here, Karen, so we've got to skedaddle, but best of luck. Thanks for your time. It's 1 o'clock.
G'day folks, Troy Cassadaly here. Every time I get to the Territory, it's always an honour and a privilege. I get up here and I flip lures at Barramundi and Saratoga and whatever else will chase my line. It's a great place to be. You're very lucky to live up here and you're tuned into the Country Hour.
Matt Brown with you this afternoon. Myrtle rust. It was found in the Territory 5 years ago. Do you remember that story? Popped up at the Tiwi Islands. Then it got found on some plants around the Darwin region. It's a pretty nasty fungal disease. It can kill a lot of native plants, including some gum trees, paper bucks, all types of things. We haven't heard much about it, have we? For a while. It's definitely still around, though. Definitely still around. In fact, there's been a detection at Howard Springs this month. I'll tell you more about that in a moment. And we're hearing from you as well. Our text 0487 99 1057. We've been talking about ways to attract workers onto farms. Kim and Palmerston's got an idea. Are there any tagged barra in the creeks near the mango farms? That's good thinking, Kim. Imagine that. Pick a few mangoes, then go for a little fish in the afternoon down the back creek and bam, pull in a $1 million barra. That would be a sweet nut, wouldn't it? That'd be nice. And a question here from Curious Darwin, who says, Matt, do Territory mangoes go south to the distribution centres, then back to the supermarkets, or do they buy them from the farm direct? It is a good question. Listen, I can't speak for all retail outlets, but I know things have really improved when it comes to this sort of buying more directly from farmers. I know I went to a major supermarket on the weekend and bought some beautiful mangoes that had been picked at Lake Bennett, and yes, those mangoes had gone from farm to the major retailer, which is great. Hasn't always been the case, but more and more of that is happening. I see Territory pineapples for sale, same thing. They've just gone from farm direct to the major supermarket, and it's great. It is great because it hasn't always been the case.
I remember over in Kununurra, I always used to think if you're in the supermarket there and you heard someone crying in an aisle, chances are it was an awed farmer. Because, yeah, over there, they used to put their beautiful rock melons and all that on a truck for it to go 3,000-odd Ks down to Perth and then come 3,000 Ks all the way back up to be sold in the major supermarket there in Kununurra. I mean, crazy stuff. But that's how some of the chains were operating at the time. But we're seeing vast improvements. Vast improvements. So, good question. I think there's still a little bit of improvement to go for some of them, but... Yeah, at the moment, fresh is best. Let's go to the Weather Bureau. Chris Kent's there this afternoon. How are you, Chris?
I'm good, Matt. How are you?
I'm good, mate. Have you had a Territory Mango yet, a new season mango yet?
I haven't had one yet.
Oh, get into them.
I must.
There's a few around, and they're good.
I've seen them, yeah, for sale on the side of the road. I just haven't stopped by yet. I've been in too much of a rush.
Let's talk about Central Australia. What's that vigorous trough doing?
Yeah, we're starting to see the trough move into the Lassiter district in the southwest. We've started to see a little bit of rain falling on the Giles radar. Haven't recorded anything in the rain gauge just yet, but it's been pretty persistent sort of rain through much of the morning. Expecting some further development down there with some thunderstorms and showers possible this afternoon. We've got the odd lightning strike down there. At the moment, any thunderstorms that we or that developing down there sort of during the afternoon, possibly looking at damaging wind gusts with some of those. So look out for any warnings that are issued for the thunderstorms down in the Lassiter district this afternoon. There's potentially for some damaging winds and some damage if they do get some significant storms sort of developing down there.
Yeah, in terms of, it's always hard, but in terms of isolated storms, how much rain could be in them?
They are, looking at, well, as the trough moves, we're expecting the trough to continue moving into the Simpson district tomorrow. So throughout the 2 days that it visits the territory, we're expecting between 1 to 5 millimetres to fall from those showers and storms. Could get some isolated falls up to around 10 millimetres as well if we get some good thunderstorm development along that trough too. So hopefully pick it up a little bit of rainfall as it sweeps by.
And how far north could people expect some rain, a few drops?
We're not really expecting to push too much further than the Simpson district. It's really only just sweeping by the south. So,
okay.
Unfortunately, the southern Tanami might get a little bit of a sprinkle and maybe the southern parts of the Barkly, but it's really mainly the southern Lassiter and Simpson districts that are really expecting a little bit of rainfall to come from this. As we head into the weekend, there's better chance for the eastern Barkly as the trough sort of continues to move north. Might see a little bit of shower and storm activity starting to push up into the eastern Barkly and into the Carpentaria, the Gulf Coast too. So like we generally see during the build-up, as those troughs continue to move north, starts to trigger those showers and storms a bit further north through the territory as well. So, it could be some rainfall in another couple of days for the Barkly and northern parts.
Yeah, yeah. I was down at Howard Springs this morning. To call it a raindrop would have been probably, that's over-exaggerating. But there was something in the air.
Someone spat on you.
Yeah. There's a little bit of moisture out there.
There is a little bit of moisture. Seeing that feeding down from the Arafura Sea. It's very high up in the atmosphere, though, so by the time it reaches the ground, a lot of it has evaporated, and they are, very small drops. But, we have had some reports of some falling and making it to the ground. Haven't recorded anything in any rain gauges. We've got that band sort of coming down over the Tiwi Islands now and starting to move through Kakadu and sort of the Mary River area. It could be some faint drops falling through there. We did record 2 millimetres in central Arnhem last night from a little shower. So There is some hitting the ground, some heavier falls, but for today, yeah, it would be unlikely to record too much out of this. It's over the weekend, really, as
that's
that trough starts
yep.
to push north, and we'll start seeing a bit more shower and storm and build-up like weather starting for the top end.
Yep. Yeah, there's a lot of people interested in that. Will Darwin get its first storm of the season this weekend? We'll wait
yeah,
and see.
Yeah, Darwin's a tricky one there. The coastal area is always difficult getting storms during the build-up months. There's probably the best chance for Darwin itself is going to be sort of Saturday morning. Some activity we're expecting over in the east to develop tomorrow afternoon. Should push across to the east, and overnight we might see some early morning showers and maybe a storm sort of around the coastal areas of Darwin on Saturday morning. So in terms of the weekend, afternoon showers and storms probably more likely to be the rural areas and sort of forming on that sea breeze boundary as it pushes in during the afternoon. But for Darwin itself, that Saturday morning is probably the most likely chance.
All right, then. Thanks for your time this afternoon.
No worries. Thank you.
My name's Brett Gill. My wife Suzanne and I farm and have cattle on Mullalungwe in the Douglas Daly area, the top end. You're listening to the Country Hour.
Our text here at the Country Hour, 0487 99 1057. We were talking earlier about the government's Gamba Army. A few more details have been released today. Got a text here from Skeptical in Malak who says, so all these departments already existed. Are these 45 so-called extra Gamba Army people, how many of them are already on the books? I doubt that they would even be able to clear just what's in the Darwin region, let alone making a dent in the Litchfield National Park, says Skeptical in Malak. I got a call earlier from Paul in Humpty Doo. Paul, I wrote your number down wrong. My apologies, mate. You'll have to give me a call back. But Paul, got some thoughts on how to get in there and do a good job at getting rid of Gamba grass. I've got here that the Gamba Army, it's a $500,000 investment. So am I using my calculator right that if you're in the Gamba Army, if you're one of the 45, your take-home pay is a bit over $11,000? Have I got that right? Paul from Humpty Doo's a good man. He's given me a call back. How are you, Paul?
Yeah, very good, thanks.
Thank you. Hey, you're out Humpty Doo way, Gamba grass. What's your thoughts on this army and what it should be doing?
Well, I hope they're all listening because I've eradicated my Gamba grass, my block. It's taken me spraying three times a season. Once the first bit of rain, you know, where the pops up, then after the monsoon, and then probably about April. So unless they're going to spray the same area three times a season, they might as well give it up, mate, you know, because I've now got speargrass taken back over my block.
And is that the key? You just got to keep spraying, or is there anything else that can be done?
Oh, that's all I've done is just kept spraying it. And, you know, I've got a little bit on my block, obviously, around the boundary lines where the neighbours don't give a rat's ass. So, no, you get that bit. But, you know, most 90% of my block's back to speargrass, which is fantastic.
Just got a text from someone saying this army's got no chance of putting a dent in the Gamba grass population in Litchfield National Park. What do you think?
Unless they spray three times a year, they won't. If they just spray it once and off they go, see you later, come back next year, they'll never get rid of it.
Yep. Hey, thanks for your call, Paul. What Humpty Doo at the moment? Any clouds around? Any spits?
Oh, it's been cloudy all day. No rain, but we've got best on. My best first decent bit of rain, the 2nd of October.
That's what you're betting on, 2nd of October, yep.
Yep, no, not just a sprinkle or a shower, a decent bit of rain.
2nd of October, righto. Have a good afternoon.
See ya.
That's Paul there at Humpty Doo.
Matches Turtle, cattle class, tow drive for Sherbert Livestock. We're all flat out. Give us plenty of room on the road and you're listening to the Country Hour.
To those people trying to call the Country Hour, my apologies, Dan the Man is not here today, so I can't get to all the calls. My apologies, I'll do my best. It is 18 past one. Let's talk about myrtle rust. It's a fungal disease which can kill native plants like gum trees and paperbarks. And you might remember it was found in the Northern Territory for the first time back in 2015. So, 5 years on since that first detection on the Tiwi Islands and then a few other outbreaks in parts of the Top End, we haven't really heard much about it, have we? It is still around, though. Just this month, myrtle rust has been confirmed in a backyard garden in Howard Springs. Dr. Anne Walters is the Territory's Chief Plant Health Officer. Anne, what can you tell us, I guess, about this latest detection?
Yeah, so it was recently just detected this month at a residential property in Howard Springs. It was on a small indigenous shrub, which is what we tend to find with myrtle rust. It likes the family Myrtaceae, which is a native family that covers a lot of our important plant species in Australia and includes things like eucalypts. One of the things, I guess, about myrtle rust is it's a fungal disease, but the reason that it's spreads so easily is that it forms spores on the leaves. And so when you look at myrtle rust, what you'll see is these pustules that have yellow, they're bright yellow in colour or a yellow colour, and they have thousands and thousands of spores in them. Now, spores can survive for a long period of time in the environment. Mm. And my understanding is that with myrtle rust, they can survive up to 3 months in the natural environment. And that's really important in terms of being able to survive for periods, even when people might have got rid of the plant, the spores can stay in the environment and then spread to another plant.
So where it was found in this sort of backyard at Howard Springs, what becomes of the plant and the property?
Yeah, so one of the things that we do when we find myrtle rust is that we talk to the resident about what the options are, depending on how extensive the infection is. You can get fungicides, but in a lot of cases you will have to destroy the plant. And the reason for that is obviously it prevents it from spreading to other native plants that you might have in your garden. So I guess what one of the things that we do is we talk with the resident about, you know, what their preferences are and what their options are, and then we work from there with them.
Because how common are detections of myrtle rust in the Territory at the moment?
Look, they're not very common. We don't see it often. Right. We have had, as you're aware, we've had detections since 2015, and those detections have been on Groot in the Greater Darwin area and at East Arnhem Land. The interesting thing about myrtle rust in the Territory is that unlike other places in South Australia, particularly on the eastern states, we aren't seeing the same prevalence and spread, and we think that's because of the climatic conditions in the Northern Territory. We don't think it's particularly conducive to a lot of the myrtle rust strains, and so therefore we're not seeing the same impacts that we are seeing in other locations. And interestingly, it's one of those species that South Australia and Western Australia, where there haven't been detections previously, are working really hard to prevent the spread into their jurisdictions.
Mm. So since it first popped up in the Territory 5 years ago, you haven't seen any dramatic consequences to native flora?
No, we haven't, but that's not saying that you know, with changes in the conditions that we might not see a change. And I guess the other thing is one of the areas that we're particularly concerned about is people travelling to other states and territories and potentially transporting it with them. And the thing with myrtle rust is because of the spores, it will it can travel on people's shoes, on equipment that people have, on tools that they might transport. And so one of the things that we really ask people to do is be vigilant and wash your tools or your equipment and your boots after you might be in an area where you think that there could be myrtle rust. If you suspect it's there, just be really vigilant, because you could transport it in your caravan or in a trailer to another jurisdiction and where it might have devastating impacts.
So myrtle rust popping up in a backyard in Howard Springs, how did that even become known?
Yeah, well, this is the great thing about the NT community, and we're really seeing this increasingly, is that people are really aware of pests and diseases and are really seeking advice. So we're getting a lot of inquiries around different things that people are seeing that don't look quite right. And the great thing is we get these calls from residents to come and have a look at different suspects of things that are on their plants, and we go out and we have a look and we provide them with some advice. And so we're really encouraging people that if they're uncertain, that please give us a call. Our number is 1-800-084-881, and we're really happy to help with anything that people think doesn't look quite right or they haven't seen before.
Okay, so is there a chance that myrtle rust is potentially quite reasonably spread in the territory, but because it's not killing plants, it's not maybe on too many people's radar?
Yeah, definitely. And I guess that's in 2015, one of the reasons that it was determined that we wouldn't eradicate myrtle rust from the Northern Territory is that the extent of the spread is really unknown, and the ability for it to spread with spores is really challenging for us to eradicate. And so therefore, one of the things that we're really focused on is just managing the impacts of myrtle rust and trying to maintain a local distribution if we possibly can. And one of the really important reasons for that is what we don't want it to do is spread into the nursery and garden industry. So if people obviously have it on their clothes or on their boots and they go and buy another plant from a nursery, there's a potential for them to spread it to a lot of plants in the nursery and garden sector. And then from there, people will go and purchase those plants and it will spread much further in the Northern Territory. So again, just thinking about, you know, if you have a suspect plant or if you think that you might have myrtle rust, just be really careful and be vigilant with the activities that you undertake.
It's Dr. Anne Walters, who is the Territory's Chief Plant Health Officer with the Department of Industry, Tourism and Trade.
Yeah, hello, I'm Bruce White from Mount Kepler Station. I've got a few cattle, dabble a bit in rice, and you're listening to The Country Hour.
On ABC Local Radio, across the Territory.
Is everyone getting used to saying that now? Department of Industry, Tourism and Trade. DIT. That's the new department for all those involved in primary industries, DIT. On the topic of trade, relationships between Australia and China aren't going that great, are they? Just ask anyone involved in the wine industry, or barley, or beef, and now wheat. Wheat's under a fair bit of pressure. And it's making a lot of farmers nervous in this nation. Darren Moyer, he's a mixed enterprise farmer in the south of WA. He says Australia must find a better way to engage with China. He's speaking here to the Country Hour's Daniel Mercer.
My heart sank a little bit seeing it reported because, you know, that seems to be a prelude. You know, we all remember the barley thing. It was ticking along. CBH was certainly making great representations to the World Trade Organization, proving that, you know, we hadn't been dumping. And certainly if we had been dumping, I'd like to know where all my subsidies are, because I didn't get any kickbacks from that. So, I think pretty sure we weren't dumping. And then, you know, there seems to be a little bit of political heave-ho, and the tariff went on and our price dropped $30 a tonne.
So do you feel as if this could be a bit of history repeating with wheat?
I think we are being subject to forces outside of our control, and it certainly is very disappointing. And I'm no expert on foreign policy, but we seem to be being used as a bargaining chip in certainly the US-China spat that's going on, and Australia's been sucked into it. Some of our politicians are going along with that willingly.
When issues of trade get talked about, I mean, they, you know, kind of tend to go to a pretty high level, because you're talking about the top of one government making decisions in response to the actions of another government and so on, and often the commentators operate at a fairly high level. But these very much go back to the grassroots, really, don't they? So to what extent is the average farmer and are you exposed to these sorts of ructions?
We're very exposed because it affects our bottom line. You know, that $30 a tonne that we're missing from our barley price, debt that won't be retired at the end of the year. So is, you know, money that won't get spent in the local community. And it's very disappointing because, you know, we spent so much time in the last 20 years building up these rules-based systems with the World Trade Organization and free trade agreements and all sort of things. And we seem to be slipping back into this sort of nationalistic America first or China first or whoever it is, where, you know, the big boys will push everyone else around.
So what do you really hope is going to happen? I mean, it doesn't seem to be getting any better between Beijing and Canberra. It's still escalating, if this week is any indication. What is your message, I suppose, to anyone listening in Canberra?
So I just wish that we could have more of a middle way. You know, the Americans are our friends and allies, and, you know, they know we'll always be there for them. But we shouldn't just follow in. We've got to look after our own national interest as well. And our national interest is in trade with China as well, and making sure we have a good relationship with them.
There is a very strong view that Australia is sticking up for its national interests in not kowtowing to China's bullying, for want of a better word. Do you think there's more nuance to it than that, though?
I think so. I think in the broader scheme of things, you know, the US have made no secret that they want to shore up the balance of trade with China. And you have this sneaking suspicion that once that's done, and that involves agricultural products, that they'll be all friends with China again. And there's no doubt the Chinese are bad actors. We knew that before. This hasn't happened in the last 6 months with the event of COVID. It's just, you know, the rhetoric that surrounds it. Everything that China does, there seems to be a reaction to it, which is not helpful, I don't think. The government doesn't seem to be even able to announce that they're extending English language classes for new migrants without making it about China. And they just need to step back a bit and so more of a middle line.
That's Darren Moyer, who is a farmer in the south of WA, speaking there to Daniel Mercer. A lot of nervous farmers in Australia when it comes to the trade relations currently between Australia and China. That's it for today's Country Hour. It's been a busy one. Thanks for coming along for the ride. I hope you can join us tomorrow, because we'll be broadcasting right amongst the action of the Territory's mango harvest, broadcasting from a packing shed out near Berry Springs tomorrow. It'll be a lot of fun. Hope you can join us. Keep it rural.